Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening. Stu here. And happy international break, I suppose we should say that, which is one of the best times of year for some of us, the worst for most. So something different for a change today. We've got, I was going to say Daniel Warren, because that's how you you promote yourself.
I answer to anything, Stu.
you answer to any name.
Yes.
Dan Warren from the Wolves Trust on today. Just because Wolves put a press release out on Wednesday, with all Premier League clubs, saying Wolves confirm new fan advisory board. The purpose of the fan advisory board is to create a consultative panel of supporters who will work alongside the club with the primary purpose of engaging in dialogue, exchanging information or ideas, and securing feedback from the fans' perspective. So that was Wednesday. I have seen nothing whatsoever about this on Twitter with normal, through normal-ish people. So other than people who listen to the Price of Football podcast obviously know about this because of the government white paper and all the Tracy Crouch stuff, which you're more qualified to talk about than me, even though I listened to that for 3 years and whatever. But as we do with all new people to this channel, Daniel, other than the fact that we worked together years ago.
Yeah.
At good old Spoons.
Friday mornings.
It was Friday mornings to start with until you got moved and we were separated because we couldn't be trusted or trusted to do our jobs properly, let's just say.
No. I mean, like, to be honest, I mean, Tim Martin's a bit of a skinflint at the best of times. And then, obviously, he wouldn't really want to pay me and you to talk for hours on end about Wolves, to be honest, would he?
Which is what ended up happening quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So, the usual question, favourite Wolves player that isn't Steve Ball?
Oh, favourite Wolves player that isn't Steve Ball? Out of the current crop of players, for me...
Doesn't have to be the current crop.
Oh, doesn't it? Okay. Michael Keightley.
Oh, interesting.
And the reason why is... When I properly got into your teenage years, you start understanding the game of football. You start seeing how team plays. And Mick McCarthy got a lot of stick when we were in the Premier League for playing sort of long ball, quite boring football. But those years we were in the Championship, we played quite good, down the wing, cross it in, quite exciting attacking football. And when Keightley was fit, I think on his day, he was absolutely unplayable. You know, he absolutely... got us in up the pitch, took players on, crossed balls in. And, you know, if he'd remained fit, I think he would have been, for that period of time anyway, or beyond, you know, I think if we hadn't sold him at the time we sold him, and I think if he'd been more fit while we're in the Premier League, I think we'd have been staying in the Premier League a lot longer. And I also think he'd play for England as well at some point. I think on his day, he was better than Matt Jarvis and better than Stephen Hunt. And he cost us, I think, 25 grand as well, and I like a bargain. So for me, Michael Kightley, today's Wolves team, out of all the players I've seen over the last few years, Chamatinha, by far.
Yeah.
On the back of the shirt. There you go. So, but yeah, Michael Kightley, I really liked him. It was gutted when we sold him.
Yeah, he was one of the where I saw him at Spurs away. I think it was the one after we came back.
Yeah.
And I had to go up and apologise to him because of the stick I gave him at Burton away.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, everyone called you a greedy bastard that day, including me. We didn't know the full story. Obviously, he came out on JC's show.
Yeah, I think it was, I think when we came down from the Premier League, they just built the new Stan Cullis stand. And I think a lot of money, I think the club overspent on that, to be honest, at the time. And I think Michael was, they had a year left on his contract. We had Stolbakken in. And I don't think he was offered a contract. So then Stoke come in and offered him a longer contract, bearing in mind his injury record as well. And then offered Wolves, I think it was a fee of about $3.5 million at the time, something like that. I mean, from a business point of view, from the football club, I can see why Jez Moxey sold him. But I think that was part of the reason why we sort of went on that slide into League One. That was one of those decisions that led to that, I think.
Yeah.
There was a lot. I've listened to Dean Saunders give his side of the story on that as well, and that's an interesting one. But we'd be here all day talking about why Wolves ended up in League One. But for me, Michael Kightley, I really liked him, enjoyed watching him. First player I ever had on the back of my shirt as well. Funny enough, we were talking about shirts earlier and stuff like that before we started the recording. But first player I actually had, on the back of my shirt was Michael Kightley, number 7.
Is it acceptable for a near 30-year-old man to have a name on the back of a shirt in public?
Well, I am 30, and I have got Matinho's name on the back. Probably not, but it was one of those where they launched a shirt and the club offered a really good deal to have a name put on. And I thought, to be honest, it'll be the last opportunity, I think, to have Matinho on a shirt. And do you know what? I'll go to I've been to Portugal quite a bit in the last couple of years. I went to Madeira, and I was there in the Wolves Portugal third kit from a few years ago, the takeoff of that. I was just walking randomly down a street with this, it was quite a warm day, just having the Wolves top on, walking around, and the amount of people who stopped me, like three or four people, my partner was absolutely like bewildered. People stopping me going, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Portugal B team, or they were going, Jamatinho, Ruben Neves at me. So to be honest, for me, I thought, do you know what? They were doing a good deal. I'll have it on the back of my shirt. And you know what? I'll probably go to Portugal at some point and someone will try and buy me a pint or something daft like that. I've had that happen to me going abroad. We all stop on before. In Budapest, of all places, with a Greek bloke when I was about 19. That happened to me then, yeah.
There seems to be more to that story.
Yeah, I was in Budapest, first time abroad, wore on my Wolves top, walking down the street, a guy come running out of a cafe with a very heavy Greek accent, basically saying, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Premier League next season, da-da-da-da-da. Started reeling off all these players from the 70s, because obviously when Wolves were in the Europe in the 70s, it was like the first opportunity of European football being broadcast, and he must have seen us get to like the UEFA Cup final, this guy, and he was telling me like all this about, oh, Wolves, I watched Wolves on the telly when I was a child, all this. And it was a mad sort of 20-minute sort of thing like that. And he said, do you want a pint? And I was like, go on then, free beer. Like, and I had a chat with football with him for a good half an hour, 45 minutes. He was talking about Wolves and, it was very unexpected.
So at least you weren't being groomed. That's the main thing.
No. Absolutely. I can categorically say I wasn't groomed.
I mean, to be fair, it is only English people who kind of have gatekeeping about wearing names on the back of shirts. You see all over the world, everywhere else. No one cares.
Yeah.
But obviously, no. I'm not going to judge anyone on fashion. I'm just putting it out there because I know people will comment. But there we are.
No.
No one cares. Do what you want.
To be fair, though, out of all the shirts I've had over the last few years, this has had probably the least run out because I like the turquoisey away top. That's had more of a run out this season. And when I bought this one, we lost like all our games and I sort of got a bit of an omen. And as soon as I wore the turquoise one, we won. So I started wearing that. So I get a little bit superstitious like that sometimes. So this hasn't had much of a run out, to be honest.
We've only worn that thing twice as well. And probably looking at the fixtures left, we probably only will wear it twice all season long, which is...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Actually, another thing that could potentially be mentioned in this kind of this, the whole point of this podcast, really. But so football fan supporter trusts. Yeah. I remember back in probably the best part of two decades ago, there was a Wolves trust then, and I went to the first meeting of it, thought this ain't for me. And it either, I don't know what happened to it, either died the death or it just, no one, it just went to the natural conclusion of it, it wasn't needed for us, which is a good thing. And I was looking around earlier, looking at, there was a great article on the Big Issue about fan-owned football clubs. You just type it in. It's a great read from August. And you got the obvious ones like FC United of Manchester that came from the Glazers. And you have success stories like AFC Wimbledon, obviously, and Newport, Exeter. Portsmouth as well. I think they came before they sold it to the Disney
guy. Swindon Town at the moment.
And so you look at it and you think, okay, these groups of fans come together to save their club. For Wolves, what is the point when we have wealth beyond our wildest dreams, in theory? Is there any need for Wolves to have a supporters trust? And is this the reason why whenever anyone mentions a Wolves supporters trust or Wolves trust 1877 as you are, then, well, what is the point?
Couple of points. First and foremost, Towson got fantastic owners. We're in the best position we've been in for 40 years. We're a football club that has vast amounts of money invested in it. We're in the Premier League. We're doing really well. Wolves fans of a certain vintage, Stu, only have to go back to 1982. That's as far as they need to go back. And that's when we went into liquidation for the first time. The main reason why the Supporters Trust was set up was one of the reasons for it behind it was fans are constant. Players come, players go. Managers come, managers go. Owners come, owners go. Fosun are the third set of owners who've owned Wolves in my lifetime. I think we've been relatively lucky with the people we've had as custodians of Wolves. But if you've got anybody on here who was around in 1982, 84, 86, because it was a running succession of failed owners or people owning the club who had no money or had pretended they had money in the case of the Batty brothers and stuff like that. So one of the reasons why a supporters trust is there is we will always be here, you know. Whether it is going up to Carlisle in League One or Crawley Town in League One or going and watching us play Besiktas away or Olympiacos in Europe, the reason why the supporters trust is vitally important is, one, we'll always be here and we always want a football club to be here. But the whole idea of the supporters trust, and definitely at this moment in time, is not for us to own or take any part ownership of a football club. But what we have seen over the last few years is that what we want to be able to do is make sure that fans have a voice with the football club. Because I think we've got, you know, international owners from China. I think we're in the Premier League. I think it's sometimes easier to look at a balance sheet rather than your fan base. And, you know, since we've been in the Premier League, a couple of things that have been raised to us through the trust, that year-on-year price increases in terms of season tickets and match day tickets. And also one thing that I think is becoming even bigger, and I'll talk a little bit in a bit, Stu, about our ticketing survey that we've done. One thing that we didn't expect as much response about, and the ticketing survey is going to be launched next week in terms of findings and stuff like that. And we're having conversations with the club around the outcome of that ticketing survey, is actual people's concern about the facilities at Molineux. I love our stadium. I think it's an absolutely unique football stadium in today. You know, there's not many like it. City centre, bang middle in the town, you know, of a certain vintage, you know, sides don't all match up. It's not a bowl on a retail park or anything like that. I think Molineux's a special football ground. If I wasn't a Wolves fan, I would say Molineux, the City Ground, St James's Park, you know, those type of stadiums are quite rare now. And something that's been raised with us is actually the facilities are falling way behind. The club are currently doing a process of sort of benchmarking on ticket prices and stuff like that, but they're benchmarking us against clubs that have better facilities than we do. But they're saying, well, this is what, say, Leicester charge. This is what this is what Leeds United charge. And there is evidence to show that actually their stadium is in better condition than ours. You only have to take a little look at Molineux at the moment to see that, you know, certain parts of the ground, the paint's peeling away and stuff like that. And anybody who sits in the Steve Bull upper will absolutely know that you have to leave 10 minutes before half time if you want to go and have a piddle. Because it's a stand that was built in 1978. It's over 40 years old. If a football club of Wolves stature wanted to build a stand today of that design, it would never be approved. No. It would never be given a safety certificate. So coming back to your question, Stu, about why a supporters trust is needed. One, I don't think Fosun are bad owners. I don't at all. I think they've made some mistakes, but overall they've been excellent owners. They could sell Wolverhampton Wanderers tomorrow if they wanted to. And they could sell them to the guy Vincent Tan, for example, who owns Cardiff City, who changed the shirt colour because his favourite colour was red. You could end up having the football club, you know, it probably won't happen, but you could end up in a Bury situation where they had a guy who just wanted to buy the land effectively and do that. That nearly happened to Wolves. That's what practically nearly happened with Wolves in the 1980s. So a supporters trust really is one, to give fans a voice. Two, obviously, to consult with the club, because you know what? Sometimes the people who work for Wolves, and this is no criticism of any individual who works for the club, I've met with lots of different people in this role as being chair of the supporters trust, really good, really committed to their jobs, some of the best in the business. They're not Wolves fans, they're there to do a job. So I think having a fan's voice and a fan's input into that is important. Where these supporter trusts, we're one of the last Premier League clubs to have a supporters trust. We only set it up 2 years ago. And a lot of issues in terms of what we'll come on to talk about in a bit about fan advisory board. You mentioned the white paper on football that's currently going through about football governance, stuff like that. Some of this is in reaction to six clubs in our own league deciding that they wanted to create a European Super League. No promotion, no relegation, money driven, right? They didn't care about Wolves. They didn't care about any of the pyramid. They didn't care. They just thought about their own greed. And one thing that I think has happened in football in the last 20, 30 years, particularly with the Premier League, is that millions of pounds have been made. And I think football fans are being fleeced for their money. I think we're being fleeced. The other thing I would say as well, Stu, as well, from a wider aspect of all football fans, is we are treated much differently to any other type of sports fan. You can go to Edgbaston Cricket Ground and have a pint and watch the cricket. You could go to Gloucester Rugby or Leicester Tigers, stand there and have a pint. Now, I'm not saying I want to see drinking back on the terraces or anything like that, but we're treated differently because of the sport we follow. For example, if you jump on a coach to go to Nottingham next Saturday, you are not, by law, allowed to have a beer. But if you were driving on a coach, leaving from the same car park, going to Leicester Tigers rugby, you could drink as much as you wanted. It's things like this where football fans are treated differently. So the Supporters Trust, for every supporters trust, there's an umbrella organisation called the Football Supporters Association. And there's by being a member of the Wolves 1877 Trust, you are a member of the FSA. if you are a football fan and you get yourself into trouble at a football game, and it might not be that you've done anything wrong, you might be that person on the divide and there's a goal scored and you somehow end up being pushed across the divide, which I've seen happen to people, you know, happen. I've also seen those people being arrested and taken out of ground. Now, if you've done nothing wrong, you've done, you know, and you get arrested and you, there's a potential for court and legal action as well, the FSA will actually support you with legal costs and stuff like that. So, and then there's all the other things the FSA do, talking with the Premier League, talking with the government, looking about how things are done. I think we also get a raw deal as football fans as well, where for the benefit of Sky and their broadcast deal, you know, recently Wolves fans ended up travelling up to St James's Park for a 4:30 kickoff on a Sunday evening with no public transport to get home, or limited public transport to get home, and an absolutely, you know, completely inconvenient time for football fans personally. But we were never thought of or consulted of when they, those broadcast deals were done and when those things were set. Now, we could argue the reason why we've got the football team we've got today is partially because of the 140-odd million Wolves receive through TV money. But fans were never considered as part of that at all. And we're never given any consultation. Why do Wolves have to play Newcastle? Probably one of the furthest games, you know, travel-wise for our supporters to do. Why is that automatically put at 4:30 p.m. on a Sunday evening?
I mean, with that one, I mean, you don't... It's annoying, but for you don't particularly mind it if it's not all the time. But the, I think the thing with this one was, it was the fourth year in a row that Newcastle away had been moved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so things like this, really. So we look at our football club, but there's also the umbrella about it as well. Every Premier League club currently, and I think it's something like 19 out of the 24 in the Championship, have an independent supporters trust. Wolves are really like, we were really late to the party because we had a fans parliament, but there was problems with that fans parliament. It was very selective. The club decided who really was on it. And if you were a dissenting voice or somebody who was too overly critical, as soon as you didn't, you know, your term is up, you're off it, basically. It's a closed shop. Any Wolves fan can join the Supporters Trust. Anyone Wolves fan can have a say in who's the chair. I just happen to be the chair. But if people, the members of the Supporters Trust decide, Dan, thanks a lot, no longer want you to be chair, I'm no longer the chair. We're completely democratic, independent as well. We work with the club. Of course, we have to work with the club. There's no point being the sort of, you know, at the gate, chucking things at the club saying you're rubbish at this, you're rubbish at that. We want to work with the football club because at the end of the day, that's my passion. That's my Saturday or Sunday 4:30 passion is Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. I want the best for my football club. I want to be able to say to Wolves that, you know, if they make something, you know, a bad decision, something that's wrong, I want to be able to be in a position where we can have that voice and tell them that. At the same time, I'm quite happy to turn around and say, do you know what, football club, you got that absolutely spot on. And an example of that is, and as a supporters trust, we came out today, the FA Cup games last season were affordable, good atmosphere as a result. We played, I think it was Sheffield United and Norwich, was it, from memory? Sellouts because they did a reasonably priced ticket and made it a family day out. We came out as a supporters trust straight away and went, you got that spot on. Other things that the football club have done in terms of season ticket pricing, rebranding certain parts of the ground as executive seating. But, you know, if you're a Billy Wright upper season ticket holder, you've got the same plastic seat that you had 5 years ago, but you're paying about £300 more for it.
I mean, I've got it here. I mean, in 2018, 2019, I mean, it literally says here, J4, Rose Ed, you can come and find, you can come and attack me if you want. When we got promoted, my season ticket was £474. Okay, fine. This season, it was £686. Doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, I know that world's completely fucked anyway, but for, like you'll say, that as a club like this, and we don't need the money, he doesn't contribute to that much in terms of overall income streams, does it? Yet, until they change it all.
We had a look at the club's accounts and we had an accountant, somebody who actually knows what they're looking at, look at it. And a couple of things that we brought out. Wolves match day revenue is worth £13 million. We get £142 million there or thereabouts in TV money. They make X amount of million pounds from selling shirts, merchandise, sponsorship, advertisement. Wolves match day revenue from last season was the same that we spent in agents' fees. That's the headline that's come out of us looking at the accounts. And we've done a ticketing price survey. As a trust, we've been unashamedly, we are asking for a 0% rise in season ticket prices. I do not think there's any justification for the football club to do it. I don't want to give anything away from the survey because we're going to announce that later this week, Stu, and I'm not sure when this is coming out, whether it'll pre-exist or anything like that. But the vast majority of people have gone down the same line. As a sports trust, we have around 100 members. We have had over 900 people because we gave our members the first opportunity to take part in the survey. But to get that impact and that wider understanding of, one, what the trust is, two, but get a wider audience so the club would take notice of what we are saying and what we've done, we opened it up to the wider fan base, which is only right. And we had over 900 responses. Bearing in mind that we have a very limited mailing list, we got practically not far off the same amount of responses that the club have had on match day experience and stuff like that. The club have got something like a 50,000 mailing list. Our percentage proportion in terms of response rate was around the same as the club. Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's ticketing. It's controversial. Nobody wants to see their ticket price go up. But I see an issue there where Wolves fans are paying their hard-earned cash during a cost-of-living crisis, during lots of different things where money is tight and things like that. And literally the same amount of money that we're paying to go and watch and have our entertainment is practically going out of the game to third-party people who are literally just negotiating the contracts of the players, taking their cut, don't put any money into the game, and have, you know, in my opinion, very limited regulation.
Yeah. And this, I mean, we've all seen this for the audio listeners, the mock-up of Vinnie Clark when he took over that role. As well, Dandy Highwayman, in a nice way of putting it, but it is daylight robbery, like you say. It's daylight robbery, and things need to happen. And it doesn't surprise me at all that you just said. I mean, that number has shocked me, because yeah. I know how many followers you have on Twitter, and I know, like I was speaking to before, when I've mentioned the Wolves Trust or Supporters Trust or Wolves Trust 1877, no one's got a clue. No one has any idea, and this isn't you're not sponsoring this podcast. Let's just put this this was my idea to get you on here to talk about it, because it's important, and I just want more people to understand that this is actually out there for them. And
yeah,
that number has shocked me.
It's something that we spotted, and the account, you know, we looked through it. We had a guy look at it who deals with accounts and stuff like that. And he basically said, that's what it is. And it shocked us as well, to be honest. And it's something that we're going to put in terms of, you know, looking at raising with the club effectively. Where's your justification? I just want to make something very clear, Stu, here, that Vinnie Clark, I've had conversations with Vinnie, right? Yeah. I think he's very, he's got a job to do. He's been brought in by the club to do it. The decisions on season ticket prices and things like that are not made by Vinnie Clark necessarily. He gets given a budget that he has to say he has to raise. That's much harder. I think he's used as a scapegoat personally. I've had conversations with him. I've raised things with him. He's very amicable. He's very happy to take on board my points of view. My partner's putting her hand up going, how long are you going to be for dinner? Sort of thing. Sorry about that. Not long, sweet. but in terms of Vinny, sort of thing like that, he's got a job to do. I don't think it's helpful sometimes, because Vinny's the front man for those decisions. It's a bit like Jez Moxey. Jez Moxey used to get a lot of criticism. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot to criticise about Jez and stuff like that. At the end of the day, Sir Jack Haywood and Steve Morgan were the owners of the football club. And he said, you need to make this pay. this is how you need to do, you know, and he had a job to do. I think Vinny's in the same position with that. So I get the whole daylight robbery mask and stuff like that. I think it's a bit unfair on him as an individual. I think it's a higher power that has that decision making. For example, I had a conversation with him, and don't mind saying this, about the season ticket prices and stuff like that for next season. The club were non-committal one way or the other. One of the reasons was that they said, rightly so, they don't know what league we're going to be in. But the other thing was, I don't think he's been told what he can or can't do personally. I think he reports upstairs to Jeff Shee, and I think there's a balance sheet there. But there's a couple of other things. You know, we have spent the best part of probably nearly £200 million in the last two transfer windows. We've paid one manager off. We've paid a director of a so-called, you know, sporting director, whatever Scott Sellers' role was, off. I don't think Fosun or Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club are short of money at this moment in time. And I don't think they're that short where they could bring in. I think they could put on a balance sheet that they are going to freeze it. The other thing as well, Stu, about the season ticket prices that I think is a really important one. We are the only Premier League club who have announced year-on-year price increases over the last 3 years, including the years, obviously taking out the year we lost to COVID and stuff like that. For the last 3 years, where supporters for the whole season have been allowed to ground, we are the only Premier League club that's had year-on-year price increases. So this is something that we want as a supporters trust to take as our issue. It's our bread and butter. It's our money. There are bigger things out there. You know, we'll talk about fan advisory board at some point, I'm sure, about the reason behind that and stuff like that. But as a supporters trust, we do not want to be. We want to talk about the issues that matter to you, Wolves fans. You know, whether that's stuff on the pitch. We're having our AGM in a few weeks' time. It's more of a social. Jodie Craddock is our trust president. And I'm really pleased Jody got on board and said he'd be the trust president and stuff like that. We're having him along to do a Q&A with fans. We have got some business to do. You know, we do have to elect members of the board. We do have to tell people how much money the trust makes. We charge £5 for membership for the year. We're doing some things with the membership as well that will be announced on our Facebook at a later point. We're trying to make it more affordable for people to join and be part of the trust and stuff like that, or have a fee, you know, feed into the trust and stuff like that. It's £5 for the year. And the money doesn't pay anybody a salary or anything like that. The money stays in the trust. You wouldn't believe how expensive it is to run a website. You wouldn't believe how expensive things like posters and leaflets and things like that. Every bit of money that is generated for the membership is kept in the trust. It doesn't go out on fancy parties or paying people wages or anything like that. I make no money out of the trust whatsoever. Nobody does. We do it completely voluntary, you know, and that's why we do it. I do it because I care, one, about my football club, care about how my football club's run, and I care that I believe, you know, football fans, I think we get a raw deal in terms of our voice being heard.
Yeah. Very well said. And I will say on the Vinny thing as well, we did say on the when the prices were announced last year and when they changed it to 9 months direct debit from 6, we did praise Vinny on there. And he does seem to be one of the people who, like you said, he's spoken to you, which people at the club in the last, say, 5 years previously wouldn't have done that.
Yeah,
it does seem like he's got a sense of humour as well, which is
absolutely. Oh, he has a sense of humour, believe me.
Which I'm more than happy. I mean, I've posted that picture on Twitter. It goes around every year, and no doubt it'll go around anyway this year.
Yeah,
but
I mean, the club have set up several sort of fan focus groups. One on ticketing, one on match day experience, one on merchandise, one on equality and diversity and stuff like that. And the Supporters Trust has a seat on each of those. So we were given access quite early on and stuff like that. I sat on the ticketing one. I have chats with Vinny. One of the things I actually raised was around the direct debit scheme being 6 months. Thought it was ridiculous. Also thought it was ridiculous that it charged an administration fee.
Yeah.
And to be fair to the club, we raised it. They got rid of it. You know, that's one of the things. But I would say this now that, you know, not that about, you know, necessarily had we been set up as a supporters trust, but if fans hadn't said that, the club would have carried on doing that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's important that fans have that voice and that input. One thing I would say, though, is that club management, they're human beings. They get a lot of stick on social media and stuff like that. They're quite nervous about meeting outside structures of the football club in terms of, so we've asked sort of senior members of Wolves staff if they want to come to a board meeting of the trust. You know, quite happy to have them to come on. Not been taken up because I think they're concerned about having abuse or something like that, which isn't the case. You know what I mean? I think the vast majority of Wolves fans are, you know, genuinely decent people, don't abuse people. And you know what? They're happy to listen to an argument. You might not necessarily agree with it, but you're happy to listen to it and do it in a respectful way. You of course, you'll get the occasional idiot who will say something.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah. I mean, that direct debit change saved me from having to give my season ticket up this year.
Yeah.
Because I was in that position. I didn't expect the amount to go up as much as it did.
Yeah.
And so I'd budgeted like so. I mean, some people say, yeah, well, if you can't afford that, then you shouldn't really be going. But that's irrelevant. I expected it to go up, but I didn't expect it to go up by that much.
Yeah.
The 9 months thing and cancelling the fees, like you said, which was ridiculous, no need. It saved me. I mean, I'd said it, this might be my last game, which was last season, which would have been terrible. And I've budgeted accordingly this year. If they go back to 6 months, which I don't think they ever will now, because
I think that's done now.
The precedent set, it works. They get the money in, everyone knows where they are. And I think it just helps people out. And like you said, from what you said with your accountant, looking at the numbers and the figures, that, not saying they don't need the money, but they're not reliant on the money like someone like Exeter would be, or someone just off the top of my head,
if you look at the broadcast deal, what it's worth for Championship clubs, it's worth about 13 to 15 million. In the Premier League, we get 142 million. So there's a massive disparity there. So those clubs, like if we were in the Championship, and you know, the match day revenue becomes a much more important source of income. In the Premier League, with that TV deal, you know, I think as fans, we should be given a rebate for having to travel to Newcastle at 4:30.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they're going to give the club so much money, you know, and things have happened, like, you know, capping on away ticket prices and stuff like that, all really good stuff. But, you know, and Wolves aren't the most expensive football club. You know, I get being told all the time when I ask for a price freeze, we benchmark against other football clubs in the Premier League. We are still one of the cheapest. You know, Man City might charge £200 for 10 seats in an awful area, which gives them one of the cheapest season tickets. But the vast majority of their season tickets are around, you know, a little bit more than ours. You know what I mean? But we get that. Like the club use benchmarking a lot and stuff like that. But I have concerns over that benchmarking. I'm not sure who the benchmarking is against. I'm not sure whether the facilities of that stadium, because as I earlier said, you know, if we look at our stadium, you know, I think if you're a Steve Bullock, a season ticket holder, you know, I think every day you go to watch a Wolves game, you're transported back to 1978 because the facilities in that stand have not been updated, really. The toilets are the same. It's cramped. You know, you have to leave early and stuff like that. Again, you know, a massive price increase in the Billy Wright stand. You know, also, by the way, the club did it, and it didn't get as much criticism as I thought it would get, but they absolutely hammered sort of senior citizens' rates. You know, if you were a concession rate, it went from being 50% of the normal match day price up to, I think it was about 70%. So it was a big, they had a massive increase in one go. That could have been done over two or three seasons, that could have been done, but they did it in one big hit. You know, don't get me wrong, and I'll come back to it. This is the most successful Wolves team for the last 40 years, most successful Wolves team in my lifetime. You know, you've got to balance that with actually, you know, the money that we, you know, we're giving up as fans and stuff like that. Stu, you know, breaks my... I know how long you've supported that football club. I know how long you've been going. You go home and away. If you'd have to give your season ticket up, I think that's an absolute travesty, personally.
Well, it wasn't just me saying it, even though there was a lot of people on Twitter. No, to be fair, there was a lot of people who DM'd me as well, which never happens. I mean, I'll leave them open for abuse because it's fun sometimes because I'm a sadist. But there was a lot of people who DM'd me saying, this is a disgrace. Is there nothing you can do? And I went, well, I'm going to borrow money here and there. But that's not really the point, is it? It's a cash flow problem, which is...
And this
which
is the other thing as well. This is the other thing as well. And I know this is I'll probably be my most controversial comment of the night that I'll make. The club know that people will make those sacrifices. The club know that people will do things, sell things to make sure that they go to that football. You know, I know people who sit by me that don't have a family holiday each year. Their only leisure is going to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. You know, people will go without stuff to come. I don't necessarily think that's fair. One thing as well, I don't think the club appreciate, and we've got a wide fan base, you know, we have fans come from all over the country and to some extent all over the world. I get that. Do we really want to be a tourist club? Do we want to be a football club where people in the streets around Molineux cannot afford to go to? Wolverhampton is one of the most deprived cities in the UK. You only have to look around the city centre, go around Heathtown, go around Wentzfield, go around Blayton or Bilston, Willenhall, you know, even parts of South Staffordshire, Featherstone, places like that, more wealthier areas. You see poverty, you see issues. And I think as a football club, they have some responsibility to their local population in terms of, you know, it's great having people come from America. It's great having people coming from China. It's great people travelling from all over the UK to come and watch a football game in Wolverhampton. But you've got to remember your local fan base, you know. And I think there's a moral issue there as well as anything. But yeah, but the club's a business at the end of the day. But as I've alluded to earlier, we are a tiny, tiny amount of money at this moment. We get relegated next season. Completely different ball game, by the way, in terms of how much the revenue is and stuff like that. We get parachute payments. But, I think at this moment in time, my general view is that we're paying the going rate, and I don't think it should be any more. And that's why, as a supporters trust, we're calling for a 0% rise this year. So if you agree with me, and you know, I'm talking out to people now, the best thing you can do to help us try and get a 0% rise is join the supporters trust, because the club will take more notice of us the more Wolves fans join the trust. So fiver, we're going to look at different ways, by the way, of making it more affordable for people, because I know even a fiver sometimes is quite difficult for people at times and stuff like that. But yeah, that's my pitch to you guys, really. And you know, if you want to get more information, you can go on our website, www.wolves1877trust.co.uk. Have a look what we're about, some of the reports we do, some of the things that we do as a trust. We're not the biggest organisation in the world. We're absolutely reliant on volunteers and stuff like that. But I don't think we've done too badly in the last 12 months, personally. So, yeah. And that leads on to sort of fan advisory board, Stu, really. I'm happy to talk about that.
Yeah, it's been, like I said before, from nowhere to getting noticed and for people at the club to listen to you and for you to be able to put your point across. I mean, it's not like you you can't speak in a public place. we said that you... we'll go on to your political stuff in a bit, but just give you 7 seconds for the video people to just breathe a minute, Daniel. Just breathe.
Thanks. Sorry.
Have a little drink. Calm down. And then we'll talk. We'll be back in a minute. We'll talk briefly about the white paper, because it's no one really cares. But it's important to why the fan advisory panel exists. So for everyone else, we'll be back in a sec. Wrong button, but
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
There's the right button. So the white paper, I mean, was this white paper thing, which is just the name of it, it's not the official name, it's just what it's been called. Did this, I mean, the talk about the Bundesliga 51% or 50 plus one thing years, and then the Super League, like you mentioned earlier, which there's a brilliant documentary on Sky Documentaries or through other means that you can find it. About this, called, I think it was Greed or something like that. Just look, Sky Documentaries, it was superb. They had loads of people. They even had Infantino on there, and Seferin on there. Classic. The whole thing was a joke. You could argue, yeah, them lot should have fucked off into their own little playground and left us all.
Yes.
It's like Scotland. But the whole thing, I think the way that everyone rose up against them, their own fans rode up against them and showed, no, we're not doing this. We're not being part of this nonsense. And now you're seeing it with what they're talking about with the Club World Cup, 32 team bonanza every 4 years, which, where's that going to fit into the schedule? Where's the players going to, when they're going to have a rest? There's a whole load of bollocks and nonsense, which I know that fan, like actual football stuff, you're not allowed to be a part of, I presume, is part of this the advisory panel thing, the advisory board, but it's the wider thing, because more games, where are these games going to be played? They're going to be played in the Middle East, in China. Where is the local fans from Bermondsey or wherever? Where are they going to go? They're not going to be there. It's not for them. That's the point again. So you get the government interference in football. It's banned from FIFA point of view, but this is different. This seems to be an independent regulator for common sense more than anything else. I think, is that fair?
Yeah. So it comes from the Super League idea, the rebellion from it, the government. To be honest, it's not just the government. It's I think every single opposition party have signed up to it as well. They understood that there needs to be something to govern football. It's a bit of a loose cannon. It can do what it wants sometimes, in terms of, what they want to do and stuff like that with it. And I think they saw an opportunity. You know, politicians, they want votes off you. They want votes off me. They want votes off all of you, everyone watching this tonight. They saw a problem and they've come up with a sort of a potential solution for certain issues. So the white paper is going through the Houses of Commons at the moment. It's going through the Lords and stuff like that. It will set up an independent regulator, but it also gives a role for independent supporters trusts, where the potential is nothing certain yet because it's part of going through the process of Parliament and it's a bit boring, but, it can get changed and stuff like that. One of the things that would be really good is a golden share. It's called a golden share. And the golden share is held by the supporters' trusts. And it gives supporters' trusts some say or a veto over certain things happening, such as a stadium being moved, a club shirt colour being changed. In certain times, if the club's finances are in trouble, supporters' trusts would be given an option of having further input. So it gives the supporters' trusts quite a unique position. So say, for example, if Fosun turn around tomorrow, might be a controversial for some, might not be less controversial for others, but they say they wanted to move the football club to the I-54 retail park, new 50,000-seater stadium. Supporters trust could consult with fans, see what the fan base wanted, and if the fans wanted to stay at Molineux, we could potentially use the veto, potentially. That's the most easiest way for me to explain it. there will be lots of loopholes and stuff like that, and I'm sure it's going to be a far more complex. The Premier League are lobbying the government like mad not to bring in the golden share.
And there's a reason, isn't there?
There is a reason, because they do not want interference. You only have to hear what David Sullivan, the owner of West Ham United, was saying about the government and independent regulation. They don't want it because they're on a good one at the moment. You know, that most Premier League clubs can make a profit, are profitable. There's lots of money to be made out of the Premier League and stuff like that. And as I said earlier, in my earlier statements, I think football fans would get a raw deal at the moment, and they want to continue on with the gravy train, effectively. This is where the Fan Advisory Board came in, because the Premier League wanted to show to the government that they were capable of regulation and they were capable of giving fans a voice. So they brought in a rule change which said every Premier League club had to set up a Fan Advisory Board. Now, I'm going to caveat this for 1 second, because if we look at the issues with Man City at the moment, where they are being, being looked into for potential rule breaking and stuff like that. The first time that set of rules was broken was 2009, right? And this runs up to 2019. So the Premier League talk about regulating and keeping the house in order. They are looking at issues that took place in 2009. And only now looking at those rule breaking, is this really something that can really keep its house in order? Do you know what I mean? So coming back to the Fan Advisory Board, the Fan Advisory Board is a massive step in the right direction. Massive. Because what it does and how Wolves have set this up is those focus groups I talked about earlier, ticketing, merchandise, equality and diversity, match day experience. They will all get one representative from those fan groups. Any fan can apply to join those focus groups. If you're interested in ticketing, if you're interested in merchandise, if you're interested in match day experience, you can go apply to the club, get involved. But they are limited in terms of the numbers of people that are allowed on those groups, and they are heavily regulated by the club as well. So you know, if you go on there, you're saying too much stuff that the club don't like to hear, you might not be asked to come on the next year. The club have got that control over it. Where the other thing about the other seat on the Fan Advisory Board is the Wolves 1877 Trust seat, which we will decide who sits on that. So as members of the Support Trust, we will vote our representative onto that board. So we'll have one seat on the Fan Advisory Board, which will be completely independent. Now, the people that go on there, they can raise their, you know, be elected from these different focus groups. They can have their own views. They can raise their own opinions and stuff like that. But from an outside point of view of club control, we are in full control of that.
Yeah.
So that's really a really positive step forward. So we've set up a Fan Advisory Board. It will effectively look at certain things that the club are doing, whether it be match day ticket pricing, whether it be stadium redevelopment, whether it be the finances, and give an outside view and a look and some scrutiny to the club, basically. Something that currently doesn't exist. If Jeff Shee wanted to paint them all in new blue and white tomorrow, he could. Do you know what I mean? Not that he would. It'd be a stupid thing to do, but he could do that theoretically. So, yeah. There would be some control. One of the other good things, Stu, that's come in with this is that they're talking about historical items of the football club, certain things that will get pinned down of the Fan Advisory Board has to be consulted on. Something that's been quite topical at the Trust has been about our shirt colour. We wear gold and black, but we have different shades of gold.
Well,
many, many different shades of gold. Yeah, that's a perfect... So what we were saying was, well, actually, can we not try and nail down a more specific colour of what is a Wolves shirt? Stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, it will cause massive debate because some people will look at the Goodyear shirt, the Dorito shirt, and go, that's our colour. Some people will look at the Man Bet one below, and go, that's our colour. You know, there's 20 different shades of Wolves old gold that could be used and stuff like that. So it's a little bit more easy. But things like the clock that's on the South Bank, I mean, that's the third stand that clock's been part of, sort of thing. So, you know, it's making sure that those items are given the protection that they need. For example, when West Ham moved from their ground, and I'm not bashing West Ham here or anything like that, but they had the John Lyle gates. Remember the John Lyle gates outside the old Bling ground like that? Do you know what they did with them when they moved?
I presume they scrapped them.
No, they didn't, but they put them in the club shop. As a, and literally, they have shirts hanging off them. And that's quite a historical sort of, you know.
Yeah, it's a nice, nice.
Something that, for the West Ham fans, I mean, John Lyle was player, manager and stuff like that. But like that was his commemoration. And yet they just put them in the club shop as a sort of second afterthought, really. You know, things like that, really. Stadium redevelopment, really important. So the fan advisory board's come out. I don't think football fans, as a general rule, we want to turn up, watch 90 minutes of football and be entertained. I get what I'm talking about. For some, it's boring, pointless, and they don't really take it. But it has a wider impact, you know, on... And you don't always realise the impact that it has. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it there on the wall, this stuff's on the Wolves website as well. Dan's not just making all this stuff up from his dream world. When it says they had about 25% mandatory rotation on the fan advisory board every 3 years, I presume that's the independent ones and not you guys.
Yeah, we decide ours. So again, though, so that falls into my, and I don't want to bash this idea, and I don't want to, the people going onto that fan advisory board from the focus groups, I'm sure they'll be absolutely excellent at doing what they do, and they will do it the right way. Our representative, whoever we decide to elect at the AGM, will be the right person for the role. But if you're in those trust positions, if you're in those club positions, you literally get a 3-year term effectively, and then you move on. Now, some people would say that's a good thing. Some people would say that's a bad thing because, you know, again, it falls into that. If I'm saying things that are awkward or if I'm asking too many questions, you know, the rotation's there and stuff like that. It's an interesting one because sometimes people stay in positions too long as well. You know, the Americans have got a term limit on presidents for a reason. You know what I mean? You do your 8 years if you get re-elected after 4 and you're out and you get somebody new in. You know, that there's some benefits to that. But continuity, I think, is also important, especially in that. And especially if we're going through, you know, looking at trends with a football club as well. You know, if we were to go back to Wolves 5 years ago, it'd be a completely, you know, 5-6 years ago before Fosun took over, it's completely unrecognisable, you know, in terms of the backroom operations of the football club, that how we are, things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a bit unrecognisable. I mean, you only have to look at that from a visual point of view more than anything else, what you talked about with shirt colour. How can you go from that one, from the promotion shirt, the money shop one, to the current one that you've got on now, which almost looks piss yellow on this video? When they said that, was another thing I'm sure that I read somewhere, when we came out with my favorite one ever, other than the 95 embroidered nutmeg Town Crest one, is the W88 shirt. I love that one. The color was was very yellowish from what we'd been used to with all that stuff in the 90s and 2000s, but it was spot on. It worked. And then they went for the European one with all the dots on and ruined it all. And
I hated that shirt. I didn't buy it. I really hated it. The Mambex one, the W88 one, classic. That'll be like up there with the Doritos one and some of the ones that you've got up there on your back wall, Stu, sort of thing like that. And I think it's important, really, that you know, like, for example, the W88 one was based on a one-off shirt that Wolves wore in the 1950s in one of the floodlight games that was on television. And they wore that colour because it would show better in black and white television. So that was the background to why that colour was picked for that year, sort of thing like that. And it's interesting because the old gold colour has changed. If you were a fan from the 70s, you would look at a different colour to what we're wearing today, even the 80s, the 90s, or even 5, 6, or 7 years ago. But, yeah, it's things like that, like shirt colours, they are important. They're a part of our identity. Badges, I just went there because I was looking at the camera, Stu, on this, but the badge and stuff like that, as is it. Ultimately, from a branding point of view, our badge is perfect. However, theoretically, an owner at the moment, if they chose to, could change our badge tomorrow. Yeah. Things like that need to have consultation with fans and stuff like that. For me, this is the Wolves badge now. And in my lifetime, there's been this one, the one we did around the millennium, which was sort of very 90s. And then we also, you know, Wolves FC, well, you know, the big sort of big bold badge type thing. And then obviously we have the City coat of arms. I personally would only want to see the City coat of arms on our shirts if we ever got, dreaming of the day we get to an FA Cup. But I would love to see the City coat of arms put on our shirts if we played an FA Cup final. I think that would be, because that would take us back to like 1960, the last time we did it. And I think that would be something really good. That's the only time I want to see this badge ever off a Wolves shirt.
I mean, remember that there was a period in the like mid 2010s or whatever that period of time was called, where clubs suddenly had badges on the back of the neck. And like, I know that Liverpool have got the Hillsborough tribute on theirs. I don't know if there's anything in the rules of having two different badges, because they can't be, surely, because they've got that. So I wouldn't mind having the coat of arms there.
Yeah, I don't know. Nice, the club would have to look at whether the council, because it's probably trademarked, something like that. Funny one, little story about like sort of club badges and stuff. I was reading a book about club badges a few years ago, and our nearest and dearest rivals, West Bromwich Albion, up until 2006, they'd never trademarked their club badge. So anybody in the whole world could go and literally manufacture mugs that were the same in the club shop, or shirts or anything like that. It wasn't trademarked. And then about 2007, Albion changed their badge to the current one and trademarked it. They never had it trademarked properly. But the badge is everything that you get seen on a football, you know, it's on Sky, it flashes up when you're having your highlights, or if a goal scored, it's what you see coming out, it's what you see on the stadium, stuff like that. It's at, this is our marketing. This is what, you know, is recognisable.
Again, like we've talked about Americans kind of in a disparaging way, really, but we'll rectify that a bit. I mean, Josh Buckley on the Whole Lot of Wolves podcast, one of the reasons was, apart from Traore, which is odd, one of his reasons was the colours and the badge on FIFA. Yeah. Because it's because of the colour of it, the shape of it, there's nothing around it. It's just what it is. There's no other badge like it other than Norwich, which is a shit little bird on a perch. Yeah. No one wants that. There's nothing that looks like this. There's nothing at all.
I've got to say now, I think, I'm pretty sure it's the only badge that's completely symmetrical. If you chopped it down the middle, it's, you know, it's symmetrical. Because other badges have either a club name on that wouldn't make it symmetrical. Like Norwich, for example, they have like the bird, but then they have the town crest, like the crown and the castle in the corner. It's the only one in Britain. I think I'm not sure if it was European football or particular British football. It's the only symmetrical badge. From a marketing and branding point of view, Wolves probably drawed this up on a real budget under Sir Jack. It was probably done in a back room and go, oh, that's what we'll do. That's nice and easy and simple sort of thing. It probably didn't cost a lot of money to design this. From a branding point of view now, for someone to come up with an idea this unique and this, we weren't always, you know, look into this. Sort of, it's a bit boring, I suppose, for some people. But you'd pay millions of pounds for this to be created today.
Yeah.
You would.
And I remember when they changed it from the FC thing, which no one really liked anyway.
It was very much of its time, I think.
Yeah, and I remember seeing that on a polo shirt, because one of my mates at school, his dad worked at Molyneux, and he saw it on a letterhead, and they brought it into school the next day. I mean, this was in the mid-90s, and that was the FC badge. We thought, what the hell is that? Yeah. And then we changed to this one, the current one, and it was again, well, it just looks like a broken 50p. But no one says that now.
Nah, again, it's like, you know, like
perfect,
like the Wolves head. I think it was first used in 1980s, roughly around there.
80 for the cup final shirt.
And like that was when it was first used, like as like the interior without the rest of the badge and stuff like that. But we've had like one leaping wolf, several leaping wolves, you know, and then I think, you know, this is the club's badge now. But I think it needs to be protected, because, you know what, I think we're heading into a period of football now where you have to be mega rich to buy a football club. And I think some people who make that type of money see football clubs as play things and they can change things around. You know, Cardiff City fans, Vincent Tan has put his money in, lost a lot of money. Probably, you know, I've got a dear friend at work who's a Cardiff City fan. He would argue they've been mismanaged. But he was so up in arms when they were wearing red shirts. Like, the club's shirt sales dropped by 90%. Because they moved from blue that they'd worn for 110 years to red. On the whim of, it's more marketable in Asia and it's the owner's favourite colour because red's a lucky colour in Thailand, stuff like that. Now, you know, we're lucky with our owners at the moment. They've put a vast amount of money into the football club. At some point, though, Stu, they are an investment firm. There will only be so much money that Fosun will put into Wolverhampton Wanderers before they are unable to make a return on their money. And that's something that I don't think people necessarily understand. I mean, in my day job, I work with employers, big businesses. I wouldn't say I'm a business expert at all. But when you're running if you're an investment firm, you want a return on your money. And Fosun will want a return on their money at some point. I believe some of the things that were happening over the last 12 months with them writing off certain parts of the debt and stuff like that, I think over the next 4 to 5 years, Wolverhampton Wanderers will be on the market.
Well,
because that's about putting us in a better financial position to be more attractive to a potential buyer at some point.
And they change it into equity and shares because then you say, well, there's the money that we've invested. This is how much it's worth.
And there's something else as well, that Wolves now sit within Fosun Sports, which is a different...
I don't like this at all.
No, it was explained to us as a trust. And basically, effectively, Fosun own the brand and they can use it in their different marketing, whether that's the music, the esports, which is, you know, apparently going to bring us in millions of pounds. It'll bring Fosun millions upon millions of pounds. It won't bring Wolverhampton Wanderers millions and millions of pounds. But they're using our badge, our colours, our trademark to do that. And that's why I think the Supporters Trust, coming back to our original question, got good owners, put a lot of money in. It's the best Wolves team I've seen in my lifetime. Did I ever think I'd see the day where Wolves were spending £40 million on players? Did I ever think I'd see the day that we were playing in the Europa League when we were in League One, when we were stuck in mid-table championship, and I was bumping into you at Rotherham away 2 days before Christmas, hoping, praying for something like this to happen? But we have to take it with the fact that owners come, owners go. We don't know who we're going to get next. We could have Americans, we could have Russians. And the other thing as well is that, you know, the world we're in at the moment, and, you know, I don't want to do a Dan, I don't want to do the politics or anything like that. I want to keep this as football as much as possible. Uncertain place. You know, we've got Russia invading Ukraine, China. There's bigger games at play here that are more than Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. If there was a change in policy by the British government tomorrow about Chinese investment in the UK, we wouldn't be exposed.
Yeah, like Chelsea were.
Look at Chelsea. They went from the Roman Empire, literally having millions and over £1 billion put into them, to the point where don't get me wrong, they're always going to get an owner. They're always going to get a new buyer. They're a big football club. Their branding, everything like that's worth billions of pounds. But if no one had come along and bought them, Chelsea Football Club would have been in serious, serious financial trouble because there's not sustainability to it. And that's something else that I suppose is a long-term trust gain, is that, you know, football fans, we do a balancing act. We want success on the pitch. We want that big signing. Even when we were at seventh, pushing on fifth in the league at one point, potential Champions League players, we're playing fine. Where's our next £50 million striker? Now, do we need a £50 million striker now? Absolutely. We need a goal scorer, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, there was lots of arguments saying, you need to spend in January, we're getting the Champions League, stuff like that. There is issues about sustainability in football and chasing your losses and making it. I think football needs to become more sustainable. the money that Chelsea has spent in the last two transfer windows to finish mid-table is obscene. and also from another point of view, there's meant to be financial fairness. There's meant to be financial fair play. I think Chelsea will be in the same spot that Man City are in, where they're being investigated in the next 12 months. Everton today, we've all been expecting it. We've all been asking the question, what about Everton? They've spent £500 million for mid-table football for the last 5 years. It was always going to catch up with them at some point. Today, the Premier League have announced they're investigating Everton Football Club for financial fair play breaches. So there's got to be some fairness there. We got hammered. We were too successful when we first got promoted to the Premier League. We should never have got into Europe because if we don't get me wrong, brilliant, fantastic experience. Molyneux under the floodlights, watching us play teams in Europe, fantastic experience. We were a year too soon because we made such a loss in that championship season. We lost £50 million that year because of the promotion bonuses that we had to pay those players. And they put it, you know, it was a big loss that year. And when we got to Europe, they looked at it and went, well, you'll be on the loss. You pay a fine, you have a reduction in the number of players, and you have to break even for the next 3 years. I did think that. I think that and COVID probably affected some how much money, probably in Nuno's last year and in probably Bruno Lage last year, how much they actually got in the transfer window. That had an impact. But then, since then, we've, you know, I don't want to go for all the players that we've signed in the last years, but I've actually been most impressed with the ones that have cost us very little, actually.
Yeah, pretty much all the time. It's been the same way that when we've actually done our research and not bought Geddes, for God's sake.
That just tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, it's worth it well. And, well, it's right what you said about the championship spend as well, because there was the 39 million over 3 years thing did count then. And because we had spent nothing at all, it was very clever how they did it with paying the bonuses after the deadline for the accounting year. But even by doing that, I think it was 13.895 or something, that we were so far on the limit, we wouldn't have been able to buy anyone else if we hadn't gone up. So they have gambled before. They have put the money where their mouth is.
And January for me was a massive gamble. They've rolled the dice. They've spent some money. My theory is that they'll probably need to recoup some money in the summer. And we know which assets we've got that are potentially disposable that will bring in a lot of money to balance up that spending and stuff like that. Ruben Neves moving on some players that have probably been at the club a couple of seasons too long. But then last summer we did a bit of that with certain players, and I'm not necessarily sure whether that in the long run has served as well. Cody at one point, potentially an argument there that we lost a massive leader out of our defence. Dendonka, quiet man in the middle of the park, does his business, nothing flashy about him. I think we lost something in the middle of our game our midfield that caused problems there. Nunes was bought in, played in the wrong position. Not really sure he's ever has found his true potential in a Wolves shirt so far. I've got to be honest, the only game I've seen Mathias Nunes playing that I've said, wow, was against Liverpool, who he keeps being linked with. So I'm a little bit thingy, but I think the squad will probably need a rebuild in the summer, probably, again. But I think it'll have to be funded by sales. But let's see what Fosun do. The other thing I would say, Stu, the one last thing about Fosun is what will their legacy be at Wolverhampton Wanderers? It's an interesting one as well, because you could argue that Sir Jack's legacy was the Molyneux. Mm-hmm. He built a stadium from, you know, two sides shut, one a massive terrace that was probably a death trap, really, in reality, in the South Bank. And the Steve Bull stand, which was the John Ireland at the time with red seats, built us a ground. Steve Morgan has, you know, a legacy at Molyneux. He funded a large part of the academy stuff that's let Compton in. So from an infrastructure point of view, I mean, Fosun, I think Laurie Dalrymple, when he was managing director, I think he overpromised, and potentially that's why he left. Because I think they realised how much it was going to cost some of these things. So I think when we spoke to the club about redevelopment of Molyneux, they're looking at meddling around the sides with the Steve Bull stand, doing some realignment to it. But the costs that they were being looked at for a Steve Ball stand redevelopment was something in the region of £120 to £130 million.
It's, I mean, that thing, it's, that thing is going to survive nuclear war.
Oh, yeah,
we all know it. I mean,
you only have to
look on the Google images and the shell of the thing. I mean, I've been in there for what, 25 years, yeah. And it doesn't bother me anymore how bad and ridiculous it is, because I'm used to it. It's just one of them things. It is what it is. You get used to it in the end. But for it to be built like a missile silo, and the whole subsiding thing.
The 70s, they did, yeah, stuff. Look at the Civic Center.
I was just going to say.
I mean, you know, it's the Kremlin. It was built for the Cold War. You know, I've got to say, Stu, like, it was probably state of the art when it was built. It's fallen behind. Like, we have fallen behind as a football club. Yeah, here you go. Like, we've fallen behind as a football club down facilities. I mean, like, Everton, in a few years' time, will have, you know, whether they're in the Premier League or not, who knows, they will have a brand new stadium. Leeds United are talking about doing Ellen Road, and they have room around there where they could literally flip Ellen Road round, build to the side of it, and then demolish the current Ellen Road and still have 1,000 car parking spaces. There is discussions, you know, look at Tottenham. You know, look at that stadium. That's a phenomenal stadium. I think Molineux's falling behind. You know, I'm a Wolverhampton lad and born and bred here. For me, Molineux needs to stay. The home of Wolverhampton Wanderers needs to stay at Molineux. It will be an expensive project to redevelop. I think that the club, by not looking at redevelopment opportunities in the next couple of years, will miss a massive opportunity for the football club. To move to the next level,
yeah,
we need a bigger stadium. I'm not sure we need a 50,000-seat stadium. I'm not sure that we would ever fill a 50,000-seat stadium. I recently went to West Ham and sat in the West Ham end. My mate had a spare ticket. It was a Sunday afternoon.
It's a terrible place, that is.
It isn't great. I've got to be honest. It's not a football stadium, right? But I can tell you now, walking around the home end with a different set of glasses on, because I'm obviously not a West Ham fan, but I had a spare ticket and I fancied a day out. And I had a walk around and stuff like that. And the amount of fans that are tourists, that's what fills that stadium. And I probably think it's probably the same at Tottenham as well. And stuff like that. I'm not sure I want, you know, anyone who says they support Wolves, they should be able to go and watch a game of football. I mean, a few years ago, we had a season ticket waiting list of 10,000. Now, yeah, I think personally, a 40 to 45,000 seat stadium would be our limit. And that's only reliant on Premier League football. You know, and I've been and watched, as you have, Stu, you know, I've known you, what, over 10 years now, probably
Closer
to 12, 13 years. We were going when half of the South Bank was empty at times, you know. There was huge gaping gaps in the South Bank and we were getting 18, 19,000 sort of thing. So, you know, it has to be balanced. But I do think, I think the Steve Ball stand probably needs to be a higher priority for the club in terms of redevelopment. And if there's ways of doing it, changing the roof, changing the realignment and stuff like that, because the plan was when they did the North Bank was it was to follow round. Because if you sit in the quadrant, there's the back three rows in the corner. There's about 50 seats there that can never be used because the view is impaired by the roof of the Steve Ball stand.
It should have been done the other way around, really, shouldn't it, really, in hindsight? But we know why.
I think it was I'm going to call it the Middle North Bank, because there's the old North Bank, the Stan Cullis stand that was built by Sir Jack. That had a very weird columns that held the roof up. Do you remember that? They used to have Birmingham Midshires advertised on it for years and years and years. I think that prevented them from doing the Steve Ball first, I think.
Yeah, but... Yeah, well, it was one of it. And then the Trent End at Forest is built the same way.
Yeah.
And you would have ended up with, like, at Norwich, where you've got the roof supports for that, the behind the goal stands, and they've built corner bits behind it.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I know you're selling them tickets for obviously reduced money, but it looks a bit shit, really. But if it's going to cost them 100... Like you literally just said,
it's going to cost them over 100 million to demolish the whole nuclear silo and then and build something proper in 2024, say, for argument's sake. If they leave it again, and we are,
it's going to cost more and more and more.
We know that Villa Park is being redeveloped.
That was the other example I didn't use, actually. Look at Villa Park.
The North Stand there has been redeveloped, built in the same time as the steeple, same kind of concrete nonsense. They're doing it.
Did you sit in that stand when we had them in the cup and they gave us that end?
Yeah, I was amazed.
I actually thought that North Stand at the park was dangerous. Yeah, it's worse, definitely. Worse than Steve Ball, but I thought it was dangerous because you come straight in and you're on a very tight concourse. I thought it was dangerous personally, but where was there on the night in question? And I was sort of questioning, well, how's this even survive? Sort of, you know. But I've got to say, in terms of the stands being there for as long as it's been, but like Villa are looking at their stadium now. And I think if we're to preserve ourselves in the Premier League and make sure that we've got a sustainable football club going forward, I think Molineux is a big part of that. Now, it might be easier to go up to the I-54 and build a stadium out there, or find another bit of brownfield site somewhere in Wolverhampton on the outskirts and build a 50,000-seat stadium. Meccano set stadium that will look something like, you know, either what, you know, I think Brighton's a bad example because that's quite unique in many ways. But, like, you can go to Coventry, you can go to Derby, you can go to Middlesbrough, you can go to Leicester. They are all the same stadium, effectively. They've just got a different colour paintwork on them. They're the same design. They're the same layout and stuff like that. I think it's a bit soulless, personally. I think, you know, if you look at stadium redevelopments, look at what Tottenham have done. Incredible stadium. The Emirates is a very bad stadium design for atmosphere. Three tiers all the way around. That was a shockingly bad idea, that was, in my opinion. And one of the things that I think also is, you know, I'm a South Bank season ticket holder. I think one of the things that needs to be considered about any redevelopment at Molineux, and something that I would argue from a trust point of view, is around the South Bank remaining a single tier stand. Because I think the moment you make a stand two tiered, you split your fans up. I mean, not that the I'm going to do that South Bank parochial thing now, Stu. Right? Not that the North Bank sung that much back in the day, but they used to sing a lot more than what they currently do. And I think it being a two-tier stand made a massive difference.
Yeah, and it happened at Wembley for the semi-final because Watford got it spot on that day. They had the singing section, which we all took the piss out of, thinking, they're so small that, yeah, they need one of them. And actually, all their people together, it worked perfectly. And we know we've been over that game enough. But the point
I've never watched the highlights back.
Oh, well, did you?
I can't do it. When I was 2-0 up, my partner, who was looking through my dining room window at me going, this man talks too much and he needs his tea, right? I had in my head what I was going to tell her. For the final, we were on holiday on a cruise in the Adriatic. I was getting in my head saying, like, first time in 60 years, cup final. Your mum can have the ticket. She can go on holiday for 2 weeks. I'll have my cup final. That'll be my holiday. Da, 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 da. And then Troy Deeney, a combination of Troy Deeney, John Ruddy goalkeeping and everything like that brought me back to reality. I had two great weeks in the Adriatic on a cruise. But I have to this day never, ever watched that game back. I've never watched the highlights back. And then I came into work the next day I worked with a lot of Villa and Albion fans. And all we had on the radio on loop all day was Elton John, all day. And because obviously he's a Watford icon, but they thought it would be absolutely funny just to play his music at me all day long in the office. And I've never, ever forgiven them for that, worst of all. But I've never watched the highlights back either.
She'll be making you watch the highlights after all this.
No, she will be, definitely.
But that was the point, though. Three tiers at Wembley because she got that middle nonsense.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And we're not used to it, and we're not that kind of club, are we? And I think that's the difference. That with all this, stuff that we've talked about, amazingly, an hour and 20 minutes about.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of hyperbole and rah-rah Wolves and whatever, but we are quite unique in what we are as a club. We've said about, regardless of colours and branding and all that kind of stuff, as a fan base in one of the shittiest boy technicalities and employment and all that kind of stuff places in the country, you wouldn't expect one single thing to be the priority of a lot of people, and it is. And like we talked about earlier, I mean, we talked about me with my situation last year and a lot of people in the same boat, which is why they did it. And they listened to you guys. They listened to you, and fair play to them for that. We've got fans all over that. We're never going to be a tourist club because we are here, because we're in Wolverhampton of all places. And we were talking about before, I never walked over the bridge in West Park before. I'm 40 years old this year. I've lived here my whole life. I've never walked over it. I don't know why. And it's an amazing thing. And it's literally on the doorstep and 10 minutes from Molineux. And I text Nate about this and said, look, I sent him a picture. I went, look, this was just right down the road from Molineux. When you came over from literally the desert in Arizona, I never even thought to say, I'll go and have a look at West Park, because the priority was watching Wolves and getting pissed. But
the only thing to come to Wolverhampton as a visitor
is the club.
To come and see is us as a football club. And if you're an art buff, the art gallery. That's the only reason to come here. We have plenty around us there, whether it's Iron Bridge, whether it's, you know, that we are in the middle of the country. There is a lot to do around us, whether it be the West Midlands Safari Park, with Black Country Living Museum, where I used to work, or whatever. There's a lot to do around us, but we, the football club and the art gallery, if you're an art buff, is the only real reason to come to Wolverhampton.
Yeah. And talking about the art gallery itself, I mean, that, it's kind of stereotyping, I guess, but you are targeting an older kind of population on the whole. I mean, we get things like this scarf behind me for the video people. That was sent by our friend Todd, who comes over from, I have no idea where he is now, but that was when he was in Colorado. He sent that over. And we do need, I mean, I presume it's written anyway, and we have got the international lounge in the Steve Ball stand, which is weird anyway, seeing from the odd people. The odd person like Steve, our Steve, friend Steve Kearney, coming out of in the championship when he was the only American we'd ever seen, other than Marcus Hanneman. And then we've got Blake, who's on here with us, and who lived here because he wanted to watch Wolves so much. And we do get this. And it is important to have fans from all over the world, and they have to have a place. But like you said, the whole point of the trust is for us, for the normal people and the middle class people, like Rich, who on here, who we can come on here and rant and rave and me scream about referees. And I'm going to calm down about that because it's winding me up. I don't want another seizure.
Yeah.
But this is our outlet. But it's all hot. We're talking about football. We're not talking about the club. And I think the reason I wanted to do this today and to just get this out there, and you've got, I think, eloquently put it quite well, more than I expected. I thought that this would be 20 minutes, obviously.
Yeah, man.
I
just want to put it out there for everybody that I thought it was going to be 20 minutes. You've got an hour and 25 out of me. My dinner's gone cold, Stu. And I mean, Mrs. is probably being in a bad mood with me as well, because she wanted to watch Race Across the World with me, which is our, like, it's a great show to watch. It's good, sort of thing like that. But I hope I've sort of give people a different perspective of, one, what the trust is about, two, the importance of the football club. We turn up at Molineux, we sometimes take it for granted. I think the one of the reasons why the trust came out when it did was it was post-pandemic. We've only had it's good 2 years. We're new. We're in our infancy. We're still trying to work out how to, one, promote us. We're working out. We're muddling our way through it. Right. The more people we get, the more people, you know, if people want to join and want to get involved with the trust, we want that to happen, because that's how we're going to build and become bigger. And you know, it's easy for Man United and Chelsea to have supporters trusts that are 20,000 and people to sign up an email and stuff like that. I'd be really happy if we got the trust up to 500 members in the next few years. So if you're thinking, you know, you're watching this tonight, you like what I say. If you dislike what I say, have a look at the trust website and think, is that something for me? Is that something I want to be part of? Is that something I want to have an input on? Because you know what? We're coming up 3 years ago around now, where we weren't allowed to watch our football club. And I think a lot of people took it for granted, just turning up on 90 minutes we moan about a referee, we cheer a goal, we watch some great football or bad football or average football, which we've all watched over the years. We go and have a couple of pints in the Lich Gate or in Wetherspoons or in whatever the pub of your choice is in Wolverhampton. And we go home and then we talk about it at work with our mates over the next week, how crap a certain player was or how well we played or something like that. And the trust, that's us and that's what we're there for, really. Give a different view to the club. Speak to the club, you know, in a constructive manner. You know, if you're, you know, I'm not going to turn around and criticise Vinnie Clark. He's got a job to do. I'd like to give him, I'm not going to turn around and criticise Jeff Shee necessarily. He's made some mistakes over the last year or two or three, maybe. You know, but I'm quite happy to have dialogue with those people and give our perspective, because I think me or members of the trust speaking to those people is far more effective than having 7,000 fans chanting your name, calling you a wanker or whatever. What used to happen to Jez Moxey, you know? I used to enjoy that. That was it. But I thought it was acceptable as a 16-year-old to go into the South Bank and chant for 40 minutes about the chief executive of the football club being a fat wanker. I thought that was acceptable. I thought that was the way how we got the football change. Guess what? Jez Moxey was still the chief executive running my football club for a further 10 years after I was doing that chanting at him. It's much more, you know, these people are human beings. They're much more likely to have a conversation with some fans, sit down in an orderly way where we can raise our concerns in a constructive manner and go, this isn't acceptable. Well done, you're doing this really great, by the way. You know what I mean? I think you get more out of people. That's in life. If I was to criticise you now, Stu, on your interview technique and just, you know, absolutely... No, I think you've been brilliant, by the way. But if I was to absolutely criticise it from a third, secondary position, whether that be on Twitter or Facebook, to sit on Twitter going, Stu, old car interview for shit, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you ain't going to pay attention to that, are you? Or you might think, you know, Dan Warren, this guy on Twitter criticising me, what an idiot. But if you've got Dan Warren going into a football club, sitting down, well, it doesn't have to be me, by the way. I'm just using me as an example. We have other trust members that sit on the fan advisory, you know, we'll have a trust member that sit on the fan advisory board, on the fan focus groups at the moment. We have them sitting on there. We have conversations about trying to match the experience better. I've talked about ticketing pricing. You know, if we can get trending on Twitter or Facebook, 0% rise of Wolves this year in terms of season ticket prices, I think that would be a very strong message to the club. I also think it's a strong message to the club that nearly 1,000 people did our ticketing survey, which will be announced on Monday. We'll put that on social media, Stu. If I can give you the link, Stu, will you be able to share that for us?
Yeah, we'll put it out.
I think that'd be really useful to get out to the wider fan base, really. This has happened. This is what, you know, this is our outcome and stuff like that. And, like, you know, getting the message out there, because some people think, well, you know, I've had it thrown at me quite a lot, what we were talking about earlier about ticketing prices and stuff like that. Well, to be a more successful club, they're going to have to charge us more money. And then I've given you the statistic that I've given you that shows that isn't the case. So anyway, I've had my hour and 30 minutes out of me now. You know, that'll be £250 consulting for you. And I've got a very miffed off Mrs. now, because I told her I'll be 20 minutes, half an hour at most, depending on how long me and Stu can talk about the fan advisory board and the supporters trust. But yeah.
And just to clarify, I've never given you a fiver. I'm not part of the trust.
You
tried to tap me up in the Emerald Club about it, and I said, I'll open mind. I'll give it a thought, and I probably will win it now, but.
I would like to invite you and obviously any of you, or obviously other guys that come on here and do the podcast, I'd love to invite you to our AGM on the 20th of April. Anybody, it's at AFC Wolfrunians in Castlecroft. They've been very grateful. They've given us a venue to hold our AGM there. I'd like to say, give a welcome invitation to any Wolves fans. You're more than welcome to come see what we're about. You won't be able to vote on the night unless you join. So that, you know, absolutely please come along and you know, introduce yourselves to us. You know, as you can tell, I've spoken for an hour and a half. I can talk for England. You know, if you want to get home at midnight, you know, don't want to see the kids or the missus, come and talk to me about the Wolves for a few hours. I'm more than happy to do it. But on a serious point of view, come and see what we're about. Stu, I'd like to, you know, invite you along regardless, and the rest of the, you know, the rest of the guys on the Wolves fan cast will come along, see what we're about. And, you know, if it's for you, it's for you. If it's not, it's not. That's fair enough.
Yeah. And obviously, no restrictions on age, gender, race, anything like that.
Open nothing at all. You're only qualifying... The only qualifying status is that you have a love for Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. That's the only qualifying status.
And that's the only one that matters.
Absolutely.
Perfect way to end. So, guys, we will be back. Well, I might not. I need to lie down now. We'll be back to preview the quite awful... Well, let's not even talk about the Forest game because he's going to get all wound up again because we know what's going to happen. All be calm. But yeah, Dan, thanks very, very much for this. It's been...
It's all right. I just had like more... thinking about the possibilities of that game.
I know. Well, Dan put in the group chat earlier on that they're only 2-1 to beat us. And I thought, well, we're going their favourites, obviously, because we are, because they are awful. But
they get the results at home.
Other than the Newcastle game, we've seen what happened against Bournemouth and Leeds. They're all referees farce that's going on at the minute. The likely outcome is we don't want to be talking about it. But Dan will be back next week, I presume Thursday or Friday, to talk about that Forest game. And oh, come on, let's hope. We had 2 weeks off. Hopefully this has been infotainment, I think the kids call it these days. So yeah, thanks again, Dan. If you're interested in the Wolves Trust, we'll put it on the link to there. I'll tag them in the tweet for this. We'll share it. Just go and have a look. Like Dan said, check it out. I'm not a part of the trust yet. I'll give it a go with an open mind. Everything that's been said in the last hour and a half. I mean, 90 minutes is kind of... We should have planned it ahead and should have guaranteed that it's going to be 90 minutes just to be...
I think so, but I think we've got 5 minutes of added time for time-wasting, personally. By a certain goalkeeper.
Yeah. Let's not talk about football. It's not that kind of show today.
I'm done. You've had me money's worth out of me.
Dan can go and have his food. You can go and do whatever you're doing, what time of day it is. From me, ta-ra.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.